So, decision.
Yep.
What's the deal with it? And I'm talking about, you know, I can think for myself probably a handful of decisions that I've made in my entire life where they're true decisions. You cut off from all other possibilities. And it's just it's the thing that you were talking about the other night about there being zero room for bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah.
So a decision is a noun. It implies something that's concrete, no longer capable of being mixed or mixed up. So a decision is something, literally, we can say that we set in stone. That doesn't mean we can't make another decision to drop that stone and pick up another stone. But once a decision is made, it is a noun. The problem is with someone who's continuously stuck in deciding, tries to stay on a slippery slope and ends up just slipping into the mud, into the wet concrete. So deciding being the verb, people tend to get hooked on one or the other. In other words, they'll make a decision and stick by it forever, even if it's killing them, isolating them, costing them tons of money. Or they'll take the other extreme and always be deciding and never actually make a decision. So I'll start there.
There's a level of decision that people tend to make that I see a lot and I see myself do, which is making a decision in fully in inverted commas and then taking all the appropriate steps to achieve that. But the focus is not on the end. The focus is not on I will achieve this and that's what I'm about. The focus is on, right, I'm going to do this. So I'm going to be a trader. I'm going to go to all the trading nights. I'm going to, you know, follow the system, you know, as best I can. I'm going to sit down and trade every night, blah, blah, blah. But there's something missing in that, which is that if the focus is on the process, if the focus is on, and this is, you know, all totally non-new age, but if the focus is on the process and the journey and the... you can just end up doing that shit for the rest of your life. Going through the process, making it look like you're doing all the right stuff.
Yep.
And it becomes about that. It becomes about looking like you're doing the right stuff. Look, see everyone, I'm doing this.
Yep.
Rather than actually just deciding, bang, this is what needs to happen.
Yep.
And doing this... Entry, 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 entry.
Yep.
I'm out. I'm done.
Cool.
So we have the stuck in your seat syndrome, which developed a couple years ago. Basically, it has to do with very intelligent people. And one of the ways that very intelligent people get stuck is back in school, they trained us to listen for an auditory question and give an auditory answer while stuck in our seat. So we know the right answers based on the anticipated questions, but we don't have behaviors that generate actions. If you had behaviors that generated actions in the classroom, you'd have 25, 30 kids running around. So they basically install in us as kids strategies to give the correct answer and stay in your seat. So people say, I know this is the answer. I know what I should be doing, but I can't get off my ass to do it. In other words, they're a good student. Similar related to your question. The spiraling around it. So the second bit, we live in a culture which basically says we'll pay you so much money per week if you show up for 40 or 60 hours. So instead of being productivity-oriented, we become appearance of productivity-oriented. So, for example, last night we were absolute productivity answered and or oriented. So you're doing three things while trading, let's say at least three things. One, focused on doing every trade in a way to improve our skills and strengths. Number two, following the system that Lance just shared. And three, not going through the motions of trading for hours and hours, but the whole idea of this is what we need to accomplish our objective tonight. Let's be done with it. So back to you. You can keep redirecting me. I'm just going to toss what I got out.
There's something in there that's about, you know, if you're just going through and taking the actions, still taking some more actions.
Yep.
You know, there's a place in there which is about looking good for everyone else.
Yep.
But there's also a trick in there about tricking yourself.
Yep.
That you're actually doing what's required.
Yep.
And doing everything that's required to make it happen. I'm trying.
Yep.
That's that, you know.
Yeah, we get addicted to trying.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a group, one of the things that we're exploring, a friend of mine, Craig Perrine, years ago, I was sharing with him the medicine wheel, and we were talking about the East being the contraries, the visionaries, and the artists. And the East is, let's say, one out of 10 primary positions on the medicine wheel. And so I'm talking about this and talking about how tobacco fits in because of the way it affects the neurology of the people of the East especially. And he looks at me like I've got like three heads. And he asked for, I read a book called The Da Vinci Method. In The Da Vinci Method, one of the things that they document is there's a gene called the DRD4 polymorphism. And what that is, that's a gene that basically, it enables one to be an absolute burst-oriented genius or totally addictive and compulsive. The DRD4 is responsible for the kind of people that can be absolutely manic and then, you know, like be absolutely manic on a project for 5 hours or 5 months and then take 5 years off because there's nothing they can do. All they can do is just sit on the beach and stare or just garden or just write poetry or whatever. So the Da Vinci's that have this DRD4 gene polymorphism, they literally have the capacity to function at 100% or zero, but they cannot function at like 25%. So what tends to happen? So I notice. So a Da Vinci that's learned how to honor their nature will become genius, will be able to function at 100% or zero and be okay with either. On the other hand, the normal subtype, which is different, normal subtype tends to function at about 25% continuously. Mm-hmm. So functioning at 25% continuously also is a way of basically being addicted to the journey, 40 hours a week, versus the destination. What I need is 100 pips. You know, how can I get 100 pips and be done with it? Or if I'm going to trade all week, how can I make 100 pips and enjoy the whole, I mean, really fully immerse myself in the charts as a detective, for example, like we're exploring here. So back to you as I clear my throat.
So there's two things in that. And one is obviously, I don't know how useful it is to say my target is 100 pips. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, we're not engaged in the process to achieve 100 pips.
Yep.
We're engaged in the process to become disciplined professional traders, right? Which requires a completely different focus.
So you're in the process of being a professional disciplined trader?
Yes, but I don't want to be in the process of that. I want to be at the end goal of that.
Yeah.
So
you embody that now?
So it's the... I don't know, from an NLP point of view or a, you know, brain kind of neurology point of view, how do we consciously go, I'm doing this, I'm deciding this, everything else is bullshit.
Yep.
And drop everything.
So the other night, we're trading, and So Neville Goddard says, assume the state of the wish fulfilled, assume that you are the man you choose to be. He says one values choose because it's a little bit more accurate with his neurology. So assume that you are the man you choose to be. So the man that I choose to be is a loving partner on a personal level as well as a mastermind partner in trading or some combination thereof. So I assume the state of the wish fulfilled. I assume that I am the man that I choose to be. So Vic's on the phone the other night, and she gets off the phone, and she is not in the state to trade. but she goes for the charts. And I told her, no way, no dice. Shh. No, shut the heavy lid. Okay? She got it. Assuming the state of the wish fulfilled, part of my wish fulfilled is not watching her toss the pips back as an unprofessional trader, or me as a non-professional mastermind partner basically sitting here and letting her do it because she has free will and the right to do that. As a loving personal partner and as a professional mastermind partner, I sit here and say, nope, don't do it. We gotta, you know, let's hang out, let's chill, let's turn our back, close the heavy lid, that kind of bit. So assuming that I am the man that I choose to be requires that I notice the qualities of that man. So immediately, I may not have the capacity that Lance has, but I can have the professionalism that Lance has. That sounds nice, doesn't it? Hmm. Yeah, I think it's pretty accurate, too. Silence.
Silence, contemplation. Pregnant pause.
Pregnant pause.
The, yeah, so in that we can assume the position of being professional.
Yes.
I think it's coming down to, in my mind, it's coming down to, you know, like the a way of assessing where you're at from a feeling point of view. Like, oh yes, I feel professional. I feel like I'm approaching this professionally and taking all the right steps. Or
Measuring that.
And measuring that.
Yep.
Or measuring it from the point of view of results.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's two separate things.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're taking on a standing from a professional point of view, but not getting professional results, then there's a discrepancy there.
Yep.
That in some way feeds back into going through the steps rather than actually doing it.
Yep. We did. We had a phone call the other week. We were trading, and as soon as she got on the phone, I got in a trade. So I told her afterwards, I made a request. I said, let me know or tell me so that I don't experience a moment of weakness. Remind me when you get on the phone, don't trade. That way I don't have my attention split. So, like literally, as professional mastermind partners, we discover in the process how can we be more professional and how can we be more of a mastermind in that respect. So I learned that I can, when my attention is split, that I that I can take dodgy trades or I don't have the amount of energy on the trade that I should. So we're learning as we go with that and evaluating real time. Yeah, the real time results were I was down 15 pips. You know, not good. So my attitude from that was, how can I extract at least 15,000 pips worth of result from that? So I evaluate it, and it basically comes down to two things. One, develop my concentration, et cetera, so that I can trade in any environment, which can be definitely useful, but it's definitely not going to be here right now. Mm-hmm. And two, the immediate implementation is, you know, I request that you remind me in case I slip. If you're on the phone, I don't trade. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll sit here and just twiddle my thumbs or do some geek stuff because I always have geek stuff I can do on the net. So literally, there's the objective and the subjective, and we get to keep both in balance. The subjective being the internal bit, let's say, the objective being the external bit. So subjectively, I need to adopt the feeling of the wish fulfilled, the feeling of the man I choose to be, and the other qualities. The other qualities being the guy who says, close the heavy lid. You just got off the phone. Yeah, don't play that game. Because it's too easy to play that game. At least for now. Until we develop Lance's, you know, screw you, Dad, bit. Ha!
Mm.
So we sit here with a pregnant pause. The neat thing with these things, would you scratch my back? It's a little itchy. Oh, yeah. Two men on some beanbags with a microphone. Oh, that's excellent right there. Excellent. So the question with specificity helps get the back scratched. So first the request, then the specificity. A little to the left, down. Excellent. Right. Also the nonverbal bit, because I know you pick up on nonverbal where to go. So a little bit of a wiggle there. So literally, we definitely the whole who is that guy? Drucker. Yeah, what gets measured gets what the only way you can manage something is to measure it. The only way to improve something is to measure it. So, literally, measuring it offers the ability for the improvement of performance. Literally, going back to your original thing, if I just go really vague for the process-oriented folks out there, a decision is a noun. Most people don't get how valuable that is. That's a tremendous little distinction. Deciding is a verb. Some people get hooked on verbs. Other people get hooked on nouns. Some people get hooked on the journey. Look at me. I'm doing everything it takes to be a trader. I just went and got my back adjusted for $3,000. Oh, that'll make me a better trader. Well, it'll make you a better human. Yeah. I mean, having all the bits in the right line gives better neurological flow, but come the fuck on. What'll make you a better trader? Sitting down and being a better fucking trader. Just assume the qualities of a decent trader. Find out what those qualities are, build them into your life, done. Mm. Piece of cake. The problem is some people get hooked on the noun. I made a decision. Other people get hooked on a verb. I'm going to be deciding forever. What a hoot. Mm. When we decide which direction the market's going, and it keeps going the opposite direction, it gets interesting. When we spend 10 minutes deciding to get into a trade, there was one I would have taken this morning, but I was on coaching calls. But I'm going through the charts, and I'm just noticing, click, 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 there's the entry. And sure enough, it was nice. But I had the conditions of the sheet saying, this is when you get in. So my decision isn't, when do I get in? My decision is, do I follow the sheet in this instant? So the nature of the decision, even though the external action would be the same, clicking the mouse, being the external action, the internal process, do I follow the sheet or not? Is this an entry? I can evaluate 7,000 more things while I'm asking that. But if I go, did that meet those six conditions? Yep, in. So on and so forth.
Well, there's also there's precision involved in that. And there's also a level of...
You made a recording, Precision Decision.
You did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have that?
I think so, yeah.
Excellent. I wonder who I made that for.
Was it for me?
I have no idea. I knew when I first came here, people would introduce themselves to me as, oh, I'm this one. And I go, fuck yeah, I got it.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, yeah. And now it's like, I don't have any idea what was in any of the recordings. I know it's in the people. Yeah, lots of gooey, warm stuff.
Lovely stuff.
Right, sexual innuendo. Right, see, it just happens. I don't want it to. It's like being a man. It just happens. Can't help it. You smell yummy, not you.
What was I going to say? So yeah, I had a relevant point. There's another one.
A relevant point.
Yep. Yes, about the power that's generated by making a decision that cuts off from all other things.
Yes.
And if you don't make that, it feels like the space gets absolutely chock-a-block full of bullshit.
Yep.
Like... Oh, I was on a coaching call, so I didn't take that entry. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got disturbed. There was a phone call. Mm-hmm. It was dinner time. Mm-hmm. The kids asked me something.
Yep.
It's all of that, just chunk, 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 one thing after another. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, I'm doing this, and I'm looking for this, Mm-hmm. And when this lines up, I'm in.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And all that other shit doesn't show up.
Yep.
So there.
So there. I think what's cool, so what's the value of the decision? So at this stage of my game, you know, in the medicine wheel stuff, they have the tradition of the law dogs. Basically, each of the compass directions has one or more groups associated with it. One of the corners is associated with the law dogs. The law dogs had a function, and the function was to pass laws to govern society. As part of their process, before any new law could be passed, the effects of the old laws had to be examined. So in Pennsylvania, where I was raised, they started making an absolute ridiculous quest to eliminate alcohol from teenagers. So what they started to do was that they would literally give you thousands of dollars of fines and take away your driver's license for exceptionally long periods. And so they thought, this will take alcohol. This will make kids not want to drink alcohol. Well, it did. But what happened was kids turned to pills. And so they started becoming pill heads, and then they got into other drugs. Now, the problem with that is, if you drink beer, you're just being cool. Once you start taking drugs, you're a druggie, and that does open the door for all sorts of other bits. Because it's harder for a cop to detect a kid on drugs, especially pills, than it is to catch a kid with alcohol. So the unintended consequences of the law in Pennsylvania included a huge spike in underage drug use. So the kids, instead of just being underage drinkers, like we all did, started basically becoming underage pill heads and pot smokers, etc., so on and so forth. So they started running into huge compounding problems over that. So, going back to the whole process of decisions, so if I make a decision not to trade when Vic's on the phone, or I make the decision to tell her, or make the request, I have no idea which way I put it, I request that you close the heavy lid. Don't touch that. Not right now. Eventually, that could evolve into, we don't answer the phone between 6 p.m. and 10 p.m. We just don't touch it. If somebody calls, we call them back, just like work. Because if they call us at work and the boss is there, we don't take personal calls. That it may or may not go that way. Who knows? But we get to notice what effects the decisions make and then update as necessary. And the key is, you know, where's the focus? Is the focus actually on improving performance, or is the focus on look at how I'm trying to improve my performance? It almost comes to the realm of unconscious decision. Are you truly dedicated to the result, or are you addicted to looking like you're working on improving the results? So what level of complexity do you want?
Well, and that's interesting you should say that, because one of the things that I really noticed in our, the meeting the other night, and the discussion about the line between robotic and emotional trading,
yes,
and the balance in between.
Yes.
And the balance in between for me is simplicity. Mm-hmm. That's how I know when I'm right in the zone, because everything feels simple. Yep. I look at it and it's simple. You wait for this,
yep,
then you wait for this, then yep, you get in.
Yep.
And if at any point it starts to look complicated, it's either that the market's complicated and I shouldn't be trading, Or
you're complicated. Or
I'm complicated and I shouldn't be trading.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So the simplicity is a big thing, because it just, it's that, I think more than anything, that's got to be part of the final parameters for decision.
Yep.
Is because all of the stuff around, you know, I need this piece of equipment before I can, blah, blah, and I need to do all that. And look at me, I'm doing all of this other stuff,
yep,
so that I can. It's all just complicating what could be a very, very simple thing, which is I sit down between now and then.
And do it.
And do it.
Yep. Love can be so simple. I often use the thing of makeup sex, because people make it so complicated. You know, in order to feel loved, I have to have struggle first. I find stuff like that fascinating. In order to experience financial freedom, I have to ruin my health first. I met a number of people who did that when I worked in the old folks' home. And it was fascinating because their advice was often, don't do what I did. In other words, keep it simple. Find something that you love doing. Take care of your body. Enjoy life while you're young, because if you put it off, you're going to be enjoying it from a wheelchair with bad knees. There's something if I could write a book that nobody would buy, it would be something like Simple Honesty. How can we simply be honest with one another? You know, one of the hardest things that I notice for people, I mean, they'll do anything other than express their love or their gratitude. It's amazing the crap people put in the way of the really simple, powerful stuff. Love is so simple and universal, and there's, 10 billion fears? Gosh. Yeah, I find it fascinating. You know, love is just simple and universal, and there's 10 billion documentable fears. Fears of spiders, fear of gray spiders, fear of dead spiders, fear of flying spiders. I mean, there's thousands of them. But, too specific. It's there's something about simplicity, honesty, and when we were talking about Tim Ferriss on this morning's show, one of the things that I mentioned was, and this goes back to one of Tim's universal points that I know is absolutely true, if you don't figure out what you want to do with your life, you're going to find bullshit to fill it with. Mm. So you figure out, what do you truly want to do? What do you truly, truly want to do? What's going to electrify you? And you got to get over all the stuff that, all the guilt and the shame around all that. Because if what you want to do is, hang out and garden all day, hang out and garden all day. If everybody else wants to be addicted to bullshit, let them be addicted to bullshit. Mm. How simple of a life can you have? Maybe I'll Google the simple life. That could be a nice thing that doesn't sell.
That was a 70s British sitcom.
Really?
Oh, no, that was The Good Life, I'm thinking of.
Oh, The Good Life. I've heard of that. Yeah. Maybe from you.
Maybe. Yes, so simplicity. And, okay, so tied in with that, not wishing to complicate things.
So we're adding in a variable or a constant?
We're adding in a filter, which is...
a condition. I love math.
Yeah.
Being a linguist.
That's right. 1 + 1 = 11. Is the... So on the one hand, we're trying to focus on simplicity.
Yes.
Which the decision revolves around, or is the core of the decision. And on the other hand, we have zero room for bullshit.
Yep.
So let's go there for a minute. Because if we're trying to keep things simple, then our focus has to be on making sure that there's zero room for bullshit at all times. Mm-hmm. Go.
So I'm a hostage in a prison right at 23 years of age. At one point I escape my captors, and I realize that I've got 6 seconds to make it through a door. If I don't make it through the door, I'm going to be locked in a big-ass building with a bunch of very mean people. Who weren't all that motivated in keeping me alive anymore. So I burst through the door and I run into a state policeman with a shotgun. At that point, I got to look life and death in the face and then discover which one I choose. Most people, most pussies... Yes, we'll use the P word. Mm-hmm. ...claim that they will choose life. When you're looking both life and death in the face, you get to discover which one you're going to choose. I'm going to say most people, most of the time, do not choose life. They choose some mediocre illusion of life. Imagine the conversations if we could eliminate television. Because in the workplace, one of the things that I noticed was people would sit around and talk about the TV shows that they all watched. Oh, did you see Family Guy last night? Yep. What about when he said the penis joke? Yep. Okay, that's what you people fucking talk about? Are you kidding me? that's it? Yeah, you're talking about the reruns that you saw 72 times in a row?
Okay, what else you got?
What else you got? They don't got nothing. On the other hand, we got up early this morning. The kookaburras were going off and so on. So we got up, we made our coffees, we walked around and we checked all these plants. We're looking at all the little new little buddy bits and all the stuff. We both love the things. I mean, it's just amazing. We love planting them, caretaking them, discovering what they're doing new this week. I mean, they don't move all that much, but it's like, my God, you know, look at what he's doing this week. I shoot tons of video. Why? Because I'm obsessed with my flip video. Who do you think got Lance hooked on that?
Yeah. I did notice that you started a video about painting that fence, and it's still not finished.
Is it even started? Oh, no, this end isn't done.
And come to fencepaintingpartymelbourne.com, fencepaintingpartymelbourne.com.
Fence painting 102 is what you need to get to.
Yeah. So, what was I talking about?
quick, change the subject.
It was good, whatever it was. What was I talking about?
Sorry. Plants, getting up.
Oh, yeah. Plants. Yeah, we actually have conversations about the plants. Mm. How cool is that? I mean, versus like just the show. I mean, we watch a movie once in a while and stuff. We tend to fall asleep during them. That's okay. But we have all sorts of real-life conversations versus did you see the rerun? In other words, what are we going to settle for? Going back to school, they train us, you know, the stuck in the seat syndrome. Wait for someone to ask the question. So first we're going to settle for someone else asking or telling us what to do. Then we're going to settle for saying the right answer verbally and keeping our ass stuck in a seat. That is rewarded, and it's good behavior, and you can get top grades for that between kindergarten and graduation. But when it comes to life, you've probably noticed the people that do the best in business tend to be the ones that were nutballs in school. Absolutely insane. And it's not always the case, but for the most part, some of the bad kids really, really do well. They also tend to be Da Vinci's, by the way. So, a big part of the whole bit seems to be, what are we going to settle for? Real life or reruns? God, there's a name of an article.
So the one final point, because I've got to wrap this up anyway. I've got to go. But the one final point that is relevant in all of this, and it's probably more like a doorway into a whole other conversation, is how much of that stuff, the trying, the going through the process, the attachment to the journey, and even getting hooked into the school thing with the sitting on your ass and
stuck in your seat
and with the right answers is and you got to question whether it's right or wrong anyway, or is it right answer? But it all comes down to this concept blah blah. Of your own identity. And I say that because if I really go into contemplating, what stops me, what blah, blah, what excites me, what juices me up, who's the me that's answering?
Now we're going to that. Excellent.
And if I'm witnessing that,
yep.
There's also an I that is witnessing the witnessing.
Yep.
And at that point, everything drops away.
Yep.
There's nothing.
Yep.
There's no right. There's no wrong.
Yep. It simply is what is.
It is. And you don't get simpler than that.
So, so we get to notice, are we the witness or the experiencer? Once we start to... There's... One of the things I love about David Hawkins is he's one of the people that's done the journey in both directions. You know, basically gotten to the his life became one of understanding that we are the witness, and he also had the capacity or the input or the tendency or the karma or whatever to become functional again. There's something about at a real low level, we behave as if everything out there causes everything. At some intermediate level, we start to get that we're the cause of stuff. At a level higher than that, we begin to get that we can contribute to the likelihood of something happening. At a level higher than that, we can actually get to the point where we can be functional, participate in the outcome, and not have to be either a slacker or not have to be we get to discover who and what do I get to experience myself as, who or what do I get to become as a forex trader, as an internet marketer, as a radio show host, as a loving partner, as a mastermind partner, etc. The ultimate in simplicity, I sit here and watch a whole bunch of reasonably high-level stuff do what it does. At a sufficient level of complexity, I get to go through all sorts of weird stuff about, guilt, past lives, programming. I mean, it's all, part of the basket. One of the phrases of Dave Hawkins that I like is, you're subject to what you hold in mind. I think a little bit more accurately is, you're subject to how you hold the world in mind. So if you hold the world in mind as if you're a victim, you will be. If you hold the world in mind as if you're the cause, you will be, and you also have that pressure. If you hold the world in mind as you contribute to the likelihood of something happening, you get to participate at that level. If you hold in mind through experience that you are the witnesser, the observer, at that point you get to notice the program spontaneously
dissolve.
Yeah, upgrade themselves to the point where they're no longer necessary, and then the dance really begins.
Yeah, and I wonder there's a point to which you're all heading towards enlightenment, and then there's a point to which we have to deal with the fact that we are in third dimensional reality.
Yep.
And the going to that place, witnessing, to be able to witness the eye that is witnessing, or to experience the eye that is witnessing,
yes,
and have it dissolve everything, means, yes, that we can then in the lens of that seeing apply anything to it.
Yep.
Apply anything to it that needs to be dissolved.
Yes. And applying whatever one of the beautiful conversations that I've had with Carol, it's been a repeated conversation, is that for a number of years there was absolutely no internal dialogue in this thing right here gesturing to me. At some point, internal dialogue got to come back. How interesting that is, because when it came back, I had absolutely no defenses against it. It got to wreak all sorts of fun and havoc. The neat thing is, I get to have internal dialogue as a tool at this point and not have it totally trash me. There was a point where there was absolutely none. In other words, any vocalness that came through was straight through. There was nothing on the inside going on. Now, there is stuff on the inside, sometimes almost never. Sometimes there's almost none. Sometimes there's a lot, but it's recontextualized in a way that it actually seems to be an asset most of the time. The journey itself is so interesting and so dynamic that shifting gears a tiny little bit, if we the science of mind tends to on David's chart calibrate fairly high. One of the things that they say, and it's also implied in a lot of Vedic teachings as well as Native American stuff, is that there's only one mind. Neville Goddard says that there's one mind, and how we fashion it is what matters. So literally, if there's one mind, and it's how we fashion it that matters, that again comes down to what filter are we going to perceive trading through? What filter are we going to perceive relationship through? Some people view husband and wife bit as antagonistic. What a tough way to go. You're going to marry somebody and be antagonistic for 40, 50 fucking years? Yeah, good luck. Yeah. On the other hand, what happens when a commitment is made by two people who don't see it that way, who see it more as mutually supportive and co-developing, co-creating, co-evolving? That's fascinating to me. When I look at trading as the opportunity for three things, to become a black belt, in other words, become stronger and more skilled, to participate as a mastermind partner, in other words, to have something beautiful show up as Vic and I sit here. You've seen the pictures on the Facebook bit of us trading? Oh, you have to see it. You know, when we sit here and mastermind and drink a little wine and use a system and make some pips, something beautiful shows up. As a mastermind, there's something bigger than us that we dissolve into. It is, you know, like when two or more are gathered in my name, or when husband and or when man and woman know each other, they become one. When two or more minds work actively together in perfect harmony, a third mind, something much more massive results. Beautiful. Something beautiful comes with that. And the third bit of using trading as a devotional act, basically as a way of allowing the big cheese, the divine, whatever, to work through us in whatever way we are to be blessed. We consider and go, how are we going to be blessed tonight? Are we going to be working with the charts and making pips? Are we just going to sit here and talk? Are we going to lose a trade and then benefit through the exploration that comes after that? Part of the devotional act is we get to discover how the whole bit is blessing us, which is pretty co-creative. So how do you want to wrap it up? I'm assuming you want to wrap it up based on body language. Wrapped up. Nice little recording. Thank you, Mike. We're going to toss this up on the Almost Free NLP section on innercircleproducts.com. That's innercircleproducts.com. Available for a donation of $5 to $25. Go ahead and grab it. Whoever is listening to it, if you've grabbed it and not paid anything, shame on you. Come on, give. You know, you got to breathe out and breathe in at the same, well, not at the same time, but it's part of life, you know. So, and there's a whole other bit. Then that goes back to your original part. You know, when you make a decision, you know, in monkey motivation, one of the things that I brought up, that was a really good recording set. The monkey has to let go of one vine to grab another. You know, literally, we get to let go of one way of thinking to grab another. One of the things that I mentioned when I first came here was, literally, your old way of being has to die. If you're going to become a successful trader, it's got to die. You cannot bring 40 hours a week into trading. You will drive yourself nuts doing that. You can't, you know, effectively bring in a guaranteed paycheck. I mean, you know, heck, you know. There might be one week where you and the charts are totally in sync and you're doing excellent. There might be another week where you decided, I ain't doing it at all. Yeah, I'm just going to go sit in the yard and watch the birds. And you'll get more blessings that way. So literally, our old way, our old concept of self, of possibility gets to die so we can really embrace something much more massive, what we really are and what's really possible.
Goes hand in hand with even just trying to be happy.
Trying to be happy. I'm not trying to fuck with you. Yeah, right. I'm not trying to be happy. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. How many conditions, you know, are we going to put on something? Yeah. Good Lord. 43 minutes. 44 minutes. Excellent.
That gives me a minute to get in the car and split.
Innercircleproducts.com.